Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Stu does America.
The show you're currently watching or listening to is on YouTube. It's available every time we do a show on youtube.com/Stu Does America. We've got this show, we've got Comedy Bits, a new one coming this week that might be a little edgy, a little scared of it, but you're going to see it anyway later this week. And we also do live news reaction if you were with us this weekend. You may have seen us go live after Trump's rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, and you may very well see us this evening after the 60 Minutes Kamala interview. Just go to youtube.com/Stu Does America. Click the follow button to follow the page. And importantly, click the bell for notifications. If you subscribe to the channel and click the bell for notifications, you'll know when we go live. It'll pop right up for you. You'll get an alert and you can check out the live. We do a lot of question and answer. It's usually enjoyable and helps us shed all the horror of whatever the day is. Steve Krakauer is here to grade the media's election performance thus far. I will try to limit him to just a few F-bombs in that particular analysis. The Supreme Court has a major decision today involving abortions in Texas. We've got the latest, but we're going to start by doing October 7th, 1 year later. And yes, it is a big anniversary today. No, I'm not talking about the three-week anniversary of no assassination attempts of Donald Trump. I know that seems like a big 21 big days now without an assassination attempt. And that feels like a big accomplishment for left-wing donors. So we do give them some applause there. But no, I'm thinking instead of a really awful anniversary, an anniversary of one of the worst terrorist attacks of our lifetimes. I mean, especially whenever you stop and you think about this, of what happened that day, and you project it over like a population size, when it's as small as Israel, what would that be if it happened in the United States? It's unthinkable. It's unthinkable. And a lot of people will talk and they'll say, well, you know, there's been lots of deaths on both sides. And of course, you know, that's true. In war, that does happen. One thing that doesn't happen in war all the time, though, is mass rape. So how many mass rape accusations do we have against Israel since October 7th? My understanding is zero. Maybe I hope there's been none. In fact, it's one of those things that you can really avoid as an army. You can't always avoid collateral damage when you're bombing a military target, but you can avoid mass rape. That's pretty easy to do. Hamas having a big issue with that. We're not able to do that on October 7th. Just a horrible, horrible day. Now, the war rages on multiple fronts in Israel as it marks a year since October 7th Hamas attacks. And that's true. They've got now one front with Hamas, one with Hezbollah, one with Israel. God only knows what's coming next one with Iran. God only knows what's coming next for Israel. It is a really dark time, but a time I think that they feel is necessary to get rid of this threat once and for all, or at least come as close as they can. Now, I don't even understand. This shouldn't be a headline, right? But it is. Colleges brace for October 7th anniversary. You'd think, well, why would colleges need to brace for that? What are we saying about our colleges? Something pretty impactful, I would say. If you're expecting people to come out on the anniversary, not of like the anniversary of, you know, there was the bombing that hit some aid workers in the Gaza region. Maybe you'd have an anniversary of that and there'd be solemn protests. Maybe you could understand that. It's hard to understand how the people supporting the side that committed all the rapes and murders are the people who might be protesting right now, the nasty treatment of those rapists and murderers. It is a dark time, I will say, when it comes to this stuff. And we covered it widely on the radio show today. And it's really important for us to remember one of the most solemn days we've had in a really long time in the world. But, of course, there were questions about this for, you know, every politician. We've seen Trump and Vance all over the place at different memorials today. Not really what Kamala's been doing. She did do an interview where she had to speak on this. This was CBS's Face the Nation. And we had, you know, we featured our
countdown or count up of how many days it's been since there's been an assassination attempt, particularly by an ACT Blue donor. And it's been three full weeks. But that being said, we had a countdown before that, which is, or count up before that, of how many days it had been since Kamala Harris had done an interview. And we reached something like 80 something. She finally did a local interview and we're like, I can't do this anymore. I mean, I just can't say, I can't bring this graphic up one more time. She has now seemingly felt the pressure. This is kind of interesting. She's actually doing some normal interviews, the interviews you would expect from any presidential candidate. And she was on Face the Nation and was asked about the United States and our relationship with Bibi Netanyahu.
Do we have a real close ally in Prime Minister Netanyahu?
I think, with all due respect, the better question is, do we have an important alliance between the American people and the Israeli people? And the answer to that question is yes.
So the answer to the first question was no. And it's important to understand when she says, with all due respect, she's saying to the interviewer, I respect you, but I'm going to change your question. It's not there's due respect to Bibi Netanyahu, who gets no respect whatsoever from this administration and never has. You know, this idea that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are too pro-Israel is about the most insane criticism I've ever heard. I feel really bad for the Harris and Biden crew, because in reality, they're getting hit by these left-wing protesters who are saying they're too pro-Israel. They're not pro-Israel at all. The fact that they threw out, well, the Israeli people, our line. I mean, we would say the same thing about the Soviet people at the height of the Cold War or the Iranian people today. The people of the country, we believe we have an affinity to and a relationship with. And of course, we support them because we believe they don't like what their government is doing to them. That's the same treatment Israel gets from these people, which is just absolutely fascinating. Now, she also has some extra perspective on the Middle East situation. If you ever want some deep insight on what's going on in the Middle East, you know, go to the experts. Yes, the expert who's thought about this issue for has to be a good full 30 seconds before this interview began. Here's Kamala Harris.
Work that we do diplomatically with the leadership of Israel is an ongoing pursuit around making clear our principles, which include the need for humanitarian aid, the need for this war to end, the need for a deal to be done, which would release the hostages and create a ceasefire. And we're not going to stop in terms of putting that pressure on Israel and in the region, including Arab leaders.
Oh, okay, there we go.
Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
It's interesting because that is not like a typical word salad, which she doesn't know what to say because she has no knowledge on the topic. I think that's a little bit more of like she doesn't know what to say because she can't reveal anything that they've been doing, right? Like they know that they've been putting pressure on Israel, trying to basically destroy their chances to get rid of Hamas. And that might not be their goal, but that's been the point. It's been certainly the result of what has gone on. And those things she doesn't necessarily want to admit to in full at this time. Now, if she becomes president of the United States, she's going to let a lot of this stuff fly. But right now, over the next 4 weeks, she can't really cop to everything they've done to hurt Israel and try to push this. I mean, she had 4 points she brought up. All of them were basically pro-Palestinian talking points. We need a ceasefire. I mean, when does Hamas, when does Hezbollah, when does Iran have to have a ceasefire? This is never required of them. It's only required of Israel, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Now, this is not the only thing, of course, that Kamala Harris has been going on TV blabbing about incoherently. She has done multiple interviews. And somebody said, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, someone said, you know, the people who say that they want interviews from Kamala Harris never like the interviews. I wonder why that is. Well, yeah, it's because we think she'd be a really bad president and we want her out there saying these things. We won't want more interviews with Kamala Harris because we think she's going to do a good job with them. We want more interviews with Kamala Harris because we know she sucks. That's like fundamental to our belief system here. I want more Kamala Harris in front of more people as often as possible, because the more Kamala Harris you get, the more you don't like it. That is kind of the way this works. And that is why, a good chunk of the reason why I want Kamala Harris to do more interviews. I will say there's an additional part of it, which is just maintaining some set of norms. You should be able to do interviews if you're going to be the president of the United States. Even if they're not the interviews I want you to do, you should be out there talking about what you actually believe, not hiding from it. And I will say there is a difference this particular week. And I think finally we've broken through with these complaints about no interviews. She's finally doing some of them. I don't know if she feels prepared. She certainly doesn't seem prepared. For example, let me have you hear her talk about the economy. She was asked on the 60 Minutes broadcast, which is actually airing tonight. Again, we're going to go live on YouTube following it. We'll give you an entire breakdown of the interview, get your questions and answers in. Please join us. Great group of people, mostly, joining on those broadcasts. So check that out on YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Here she is talking about the economy.
My plan is about saying that when you invest in small businesses, you invest in the middle class, and you strengthen America's economy. Small businesses are part of the backbone of America's economy.
But pardon me, Madam Vice President. The question was, how are you going to pay for it?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things is I'm going to make sure that the richest among us who can afford it pay their fair share in taxes.
Mm-hmm.
It is not right that teachers and nurses and firefighters are paying a higher tax rate than billionaires and the biggest corporations.
But
I plan on making that fair.
But we're dealing with the real world here.
But the real world includes...
How are you going to get this through Congress?
You know, when you talk quietly with
Congress?
A lot of folks in Congress, they know exactly what I'm talking about. Because their constituents know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, sure they do.
Their constituents are those firefighters and teachers and nurses.
Now, I don't need to tell you that obviously what she's saying is a lie. These tax rates are made up. They're figments of her imagination. You know, another figment of her imagination, and don't make me go Brian Riedel all over you here, but we can break down how much money you can take from the rich to pay for all this stuff. And it is impossible, even with 100% tax rates, to do such a thing. It is not possible. She's talking about $5 trillion of extra taxes. Those aren't all coming from rich people. I got news for you. They're coming from you. They're coming from your sons, your daughters, your fathers, your cousins, your brothers, all that. That's where they're coming from. And they will trickle down to the middle class, as they always do, or we'll just go into more and more debt, and we will suffer more and more. We'll break down that entire interview again, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. As soon as it's over, just come on over to the channel and go there, click follow, and click the bell for notifications. Now, Kamala, that's not the only interview she did. She also did one with Call Her Daddy. Call Her Daddy is a podcast, very big podcast, by the way, if you've never heard of it. It was originally on Barstool, I think, or at least at one point was on Barstool, part of their podcast network. The reason I bring that part up is it's kind of a mixed audience, right? Like, that is not a left-wing audience. Okay, this is an audience that has, you know, Dave Portnoy, who's, you know, interviewed Donald Trump last time out. I mean, I would say a sort of right-leaning, center-right type of audience. And so she leaves that a while ago. She went to Spotify. I mean, it seems like every 6 months she signs another $100 million contract somewhere. But this is one of the biggest podcasts in the world. I mean, I believe today on Apple Podcasts it was number one. So, I mean, ahead of Joe Rogan, ahead of, you know, The Daily on, you know, from The New York Times, even ahead of, I have to admit it, this podcast. I know. Who would have thought? But the thing is, this is why she's going on the show. It does have a big audience, as a big audience of young females, obviously a core constituency, but not everybody's so happy about it. Call Her Daddy fans blast Alex Cooper over Kamala Harris interview. Feels like propaganda. Now, look, basically she went on there because she wanted to talk about abortion. This is the one topic that, generally speaking, with a couple of exceptions, Kamala Harris is actually comfortable talking about because she really believes it. It's the one time she can kind of say what she really believes. She won't admit that she wants 9-month abortions. She won't admit that she wants laws that allow kids to die after they've been born after a botched abortion. There's a couple of lines she has, but generally speaking, she can speak about it at length and not feel like she's, you know, as people always mention, forgot to study for a test and is, you know, called on in class and, you know, has to be part of her pop quiz to give a verbal answer. You know, it's not like that with abortion. She's very well versed in ending the lives of potential children, or as you might call them, children. Here she is talking about why she went on the Call Her Daddy podcast.
I'm curious, like, you don't do too many long-form interviews.
Or any.
What made you want to do Call Her Daddy today?
Well, I think you and your listeners have really got this thing right, which is one of the best ways to communicate with people is to be real.
So why haven't you tried
you know,
that before?
And to talk about the things that people really care about. I mean, what I love about what you do is that your voice and your show is really about your listeners. And I think especially now, this is a moment in the country and in life where people really want to know they're seen and heard and that they're part of a community, that they're not out there alone.
Again, nonsense. She just keeps going with it.
And so I'm really glad to be with you.
First of all, that's not what the show's about, as far as I know. I mean, she's just a big star, right? Like, so people come to listen to her podcast. It's, you know, I don't think it's necessary. I mean, she does interviews. She talks about her own life. I don't think it is actually about the audience. Maybe it is. But if it is about the best way, because she's figured it out, the best way is to be authentic in a long-form podcast, why hasn't Kamala Harris done any of these interviews before? If she has it down so well, why is she just starting now? It's just so obviously and blatantly ridiculous. They also went into the abortion thing. You can imagine how that went.
In the debate, former President Trump claimed that some states are executing babies after birth. Can you just clarify?
That is not happening anywhere in the United States. It is not happening, and it's a lie. Just, it's a bold-faced lie.
Now, of course, there was a bold-faced lie told there. Of course, it was by Kamala Harris. Of course, as anybody who knows anything about this topic can tell you, and you might be even in favor of this policy. I'm not saying that people who are pro-choice know nothing about this topic. The topic is clear. We could tell you about the Virginia governor interview, but you've all probably heard that already. Let's go to Tim Walz. Tim Walz changed the law in Minnesota. For decades, what it said was if a baby is born from a botched abortion, doctors must do everything in their power to keep the baby alive. Tim Walz changed the law so that they don't have to do everything to keep the baby alive. What they do instead is they have to give care. And what do you think about when you think about care? It's the same way you talk about your 100-year-old grandma who's on death's door, and it's like, should we just unplug her and make her comfortable? That is what they're talking about. They're like, the baby gets born. They're like, you know, we don't really want this thing. What if we just, you know, pump it up with some drugs and maybe take away some of the pain it's obviously feeling? Don't feed it, just let it die, and then it'll be over. We meant to kill it anyway. Now that it's alive, it's kind of unfair to us. Let the thing expire. That's what happened. That's what Tim Walz did. That is what Donald Trump was talking about in his typical, slightly inaccurate form. It's what J.D. Vance was talking about in very, very specific form during the VP debate. Both Walz and Kamala are lying about this. They know they're lying, they know how they're lying, and they're doing it anyway. It's unfortunate, but it's true. I've now ranted for too long, and all of this material here is going to make, if I get into any of this, I'm going to be talking for another 20 minutes. So I'm going to take a break. We'll come back on the other side, and we'll get you so much more what's going on in the news. We have Steve Krakauer in the media today. We've got a great Tim Walz clip about abortion, him actually getting pressed by someone who knows what they're talking about. We'll get into that as well. It's all here on Stu Does America. This incredibly wonderful, wonderful day that despite a terrible, terrible anniversary, we're going to try to make the best of it and maybe try to work towards something that is actually positive in the future instead of the direction that everyone seems to want to go in and the world seems to keep pushing us in. I'm going to keep trying to keep this as positive as possible, even though my natural, inherent, obstructive pessimism is here making me feel like crap a lot of the days. But I'm going to do the opposite of that. We'll come back in just a second.
Stu Does America.
Oh, man. And I just said I was going to be positive, but did you see any of the maps of Florida right now? We are days away from a massive hurricane hitting an area that has not been hit in a while. It looks like at least Tampa is going to be hit with a massive hurricane. Right now, it's a Category 5. It looks like it will weaken a little bit, hopefully, and will stay weaker before it actually hits Tampa. We also have the situation in North Carolina. And I was listening to some of the people in North Carolina, and they're like, well, why didn't we, you know, people are asking, why didn't we prepare for this? It's like preparing for a blizzard in Florida. Like, these things don't hit us like this. We had no reason to prepare for it. We're way inland. This is not supposed to be a thing we're dealing with. You don't know what's around the corner. You don't know. And all you can do is prepare for the basics and make sure that your family and loved ones have water, they have food, they have the things that they need, they have the medications they need. Now, this is why I talk about the Jace case all the time. They're like the first people who really kind of address this particular thing, because a lot of people think about those other topics. They're super important. We talk about those often as well. But you kind of forget about medicine. It's like one of those things. I don't know, you know, it doesn't hit you the same way. The Jace case is a personalized emergency medication kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. You can customize it as well with all sorts of stuff. You can even buy long-term supplies of the daily medications that you need. These are the types of things that run out in a crisis. Jace.com, J-A-S-E.com. Enter the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at Jace.com, J-A-S-E.com, the promo code STU.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
I want to clarify what the law is there in Minnesota. Abortion Finder, a website that helps women find access, says abortion is legal throughout pregnancy in Minnesota. There is no ban or limit on abortion in Minnesota based on how far along in a pregnancy you are. You signed the bill that makes it legal through all 9 months. Is that a position you think Democrats should advocate for nationally?
Look, the vice president and I have been clear. The restoration of Roe versus Wade is what we're asking
but
for.
This
is
a woman's right. But that law goes far beyond Roe v. Wade.
To make her own choice. The law is very clear. It does not change that. That has been debunked on every occasion.
Let's agree. What you signed is there's not a single limit through 9 months of pregnancy. Roe had a trimester framework that did have limits through the pregnancy. The Minnesota law does not have that.
This puts the decision with the woman and her health care providers.
That's
the situation
true.
We have is when you don't have the ability of health care providers to provide that, that's where you end up with a situation like Amanda Zaworski in Texas, where
this
they are afraid to do what's necessary. This doesn't change anything. It puts the decision back on to the woman, to the physicians. And we know that this is simply something to be brought up to be very clear. Donald Trump's asking for a nationwide abortion ban.
He will not sign a national abortion ban. Are you calling that it's a flat out lie?
Yes, of course. And of course. Senator Vance has in the past said so, too. Now, look, they may see this as an election issue. We see it as a right of women to make their own bodily decisions. And that's what the states like my state have the ability to put that in. States like Georgia force women to cross the border, and then we have a death of Amber Thurman.
This is a
lie. Let's be very clear. Cut hairs on an issue on this is not where the American public's at. They want the restoration of Roe versus Wade. Vice President Harris said she would sign it. That's what we'll do when we're elected.
But to be clear, the Minnesota law is far beyond Roe v. Wade. And about the Amber Thurman case in Georgia, her family has, and it's tragic, she is a young mother who left behind a young son. But what her family has said is it was a complication from an abortion pill that she received, and she didn't get proper care when she went to a Georgia hospital, which had multiple opportunities to intervene there. Her own attorney, the family's attorney, says it wasn't the Georgia law, it was the hospitals. What he claims is malpractice, not treating her when she clearly showed up in distress and still had the byproducts of her pregnancy because of that rare complication from the abortion pill. So just to be clear on the Georgia law and how her family and her attorney sees it.
This is what it's like to actually be fact-checked by someone who knows what they're talking about, which is what Shannon Bream did there. She gave him actual facts. He tried to shoot it off multiple times. He tried to kind of knock her off target a couple times there, but she was very focused. I will say too, I will say that Hillary Kennedy, our own Hillary Kennedy, is the nicest person I've ever met in the entire media, which I think is true. Though I will say a lot of people who know Shannon Bream have said she'd be in competition for that. She does a great job there, bringing up the points that needed to come. I have no idea why they agreed to that interview. It's insane. They obviously have felt this pressure, and now they're actually out there doing interviews. But over and over and over again, there is no question. The only thing Tim Walz said was true there was we're putting the decision back in the hands of women and their doctors. What that means is that if they're 17 seconds before birth and the woman and their doctor decide, let's kill it, they can kill it. That's the decision. A law takes the decision out of the hands of the mother and the doctor. It's true. Where you set that limit is really important to a lot of people. And if you set it at no limit, then people can make that decision whenever they want. It's every law is this way. If you said, look, people say that they want a speed limit, but we put the decision in the hands of the drivers. Well, then people are going to be driving 140 miles an hour. That's what's going to happen. If their cars can handle it. Okay, that's the whole abortion thing. Let me go on to Saturday Night Live, though, first, because they actually did go after Tim Walz here a little bit. And it's funny because they mocked Kamala Harris a little bit back in the day when she was just the VP, because it was okay. No one cares. No one, people don't vote on the VP. So it was okay to do that to her. Now that she's president, or a presidential hopeful, what they did in the sketch the other night, Saturday Night Live mocks Walz over China falsehood. What they did, and here's the photo of what, by the way, Gaffigan is excellent as Tim Walz. And actually, I will say, was it Yang? Is actually pretty good. Bone Yang is pretty good at the Vance thing as well. I mean, but my point, though, is that like they mocked incessantly, all of the Republican candidates, and then they would just have the lightest touch on the Democrats that mattered. This is why this is so frustrating. Watching SNL last night, Saturday, you saw a very, very funny, for the second straight week, Dana Carvey come out and just wreck Joe Biden. Just wreck him. Basically take him down and go after him every way possible, mocking everything that all of us see. How incoherent he is, how he's lost all the time, how he stares blankly at the camera, how he starts sentences that interrupts himself with other non sequiturs over and over and doesn't know where he is, doesn't know what's going on. All the jokes we have made on this show since its launch in 2020. We've said all these things over and over and over again. Glenn has said them over and over and over again. Dave Landau has said them over and over and over again. And they let 3.5 years go on this show because they thought it would hurt political outcomes. They didn't mock him. They didn't go after him like this. They waited until the second he meant nothing politically. And then, only then, did they start going after Joe Biden and get the laughs they could have been having for 4 years. It's sad. They should be going after Kamala the same freaking way. Keep going after them. Highlight how idiotic they are. Because the only thing they did in this sketch was to say, oh, Kamala, she's so competent, she's winning, everything's going great. Oh, Tim Walz screwed it up. They can't do anything to Kamala. They have to make her look so brilliant right now because they want her to win. Well, let's keep remembering what an idiot she actually is.
And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Look, from the time that the president called me and told me he wasn't running, I mean, it just like everything was in speedy, speedy motion. And I was not sleeping so well. And I like to sleep. I just got up, I just went out and got a pork roast and started marinating.
It's time to work. Get to your happy place.
And my family happened to be in town, so they were very happy about the whole situation. But I just got up and started, everybody's asleep, I just got up and started cooking.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
It's not just pork roasts that are on the ballot. The future of the Supreme Court is as well. And these radical left people over there want to do everything they can in Washington to, you know, pack the Supreme Court with their own handpicked justices and get the outcomes that they want. They don't like the decisions they've been getting, so they want to manipulate the court. And if they do this, they will get rid of the filibuster, and you can promise yourself that that's what you're going to see. So how do we stop this? First Liberty's trying to do something about it. They call this assault on the court what it really is, a Supreme Court coup. And that's why they've been sounding the alarm, and they need you to join the team. If we can take to action together, we can do something about this. But the radical left's plan is serious. They want to take control of the Supreme Court. And as the 2024 election approaches, you need to get out there and vote. You need to tell everybody about what you're doing, and what you've found when you've done your research, and so much more. So make sure you go out there and get on board with First Liberty. Go to supremecoup.com/stew, supremecoup.com/stew. You can learn out how to take the radical left's plan and stop it. They're working hard. And if you don't know First Liberty, you don't know all the work they've done already to protect your religious liberty. SupremeCoup.com/stew. SupremeCoup.com/stew.
Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
I'm joined once again by Steve Krakauer, author of Uncovered: How the Media Got Cozy with Power, Abandoned Its Principles, and Lost the People. This is available wherever you get your books. It's a great read. I highly recommend it. Steve, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Hey, Stu. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I was thinking about you this weekend as I was watching the news. I'm watching like how the media, for example, isn't covering the Doug Emhoff accusations. Right. And I always think about what you say, and you talk about this in the book, that you actually love the media. You want it to get better. And I just feel like the media has failed you dramatically this election season.
They have. I think the silver lining with all of this, Stu, is that it's more transparent than ever. And this is no reason of that. The fact that I wrote the book, now about a year and a half ago that exposed any of this. I honestly think that this has happened for several years. I can put the timeline roughly at around the time that Donald Trump came on the scene. I think it really expedited during COVID. And I think it's been extremely glaringly obvious how politically motivated, how biased, how hypocritical the corporate media is in large numbers this election cycle for sure. But it's really breaking through. I mean, I talk to people here in Texas every day who are apolitical, who are not overly engaged, who are not media junkies and spend all day on X like I do, and they see it. They see that there is something. They say they're just so exhausted, they don't know who to trust, and that includes the places that they used to trust. Places like CNN or the New York Times or the Washington Post have completely torpedoed their credibility on many of the stories, but it's become so obvious now, and I think it's because there are so many more choices out there, so many more independent sources to go to, that you can really start to see what you're not being told or how you're being framed than the narratives that are being spun by these places that used to have real credibility. And I think it's more obvious than ever, which is really, really refreshing.
Yeah, I think that is. I think it's true. I think people kind of recognize it. I think, the Elon Musk takeover of X has been, I think, helpful in this regard as well. I'm still shocked at some level, though. Like, I'm shocked by the big picture stuff. Like, there's always been this idea, and I think old school journalists, even though they leaned left and didn't tell stories the way I would like them to tell the stories, had this sort of journalistic pride in a way that they wanted to at least have history look back at them as those serious Walter Cronkite type right. journalists. And I just feel like that's gone. I mean, you look at like the fact that they did not hold Kamala Harris responsible for doing the interview for 3 months as a candidate. Like that is the type of stuff that I feel like in any other era, she would have been called out on immediately.
Yeah. It's purely with the goal of, and I would say not even just electing Kamala Harris, but making sure that Donald Trump does not become president again. And I think that there's two things at play when you kind of step back and look at what's going on this cycle. The first is that which is this amazing microcosm of the problem by, if you look at just June, July, and August, okay, and just the way the media covered, what is the dominant political stories of those 3 months? So in June, there was a massive cover-up. I think it's fair to call it a literal cover-up by places like the corporate media, but also by government forces, by the left, to make it seem like Joe Biden was just, you know, just the greatest Biden ever, you know, best mm-hmm. version of Biden ever. And then the debate happened, and then it became an all-hands-on-deck assault by the media to get Joe Biden out there. They just opened their notebooks, and if you want to really put an actual, you know, framing of what happened there, they decided to do their jobs. They decided that it would be beneficial for what they wanted, which was that a new candidate would emerge as the Democratic nominee, for them to learn the lessons of journalism once again. And that's what they did during the month of July until they could push Biden out there. And then once Kamala Harris was installed, notebooks down, let's get back to our partisan ways. It was just so clearly obvious there. So I do think that there's a huge element of that that's happening. But the second thing that I think is really important is that social media, and I do get out this a little bit with Uncovered, it has completely changed the game, because it used to be where journalists almost embraced being disliked by people in power, by large numbers of the audience. They were annoying. They were people that just asked questions and were just bugging the people in power, and by other people that were in you know, even just the public. That was not an occupation that people held in the highest esteem. They were annoying. That was the job. Now with social media, you want to be liked. You want to get likes. You want to gain big followings, and that's antithetical to what the goal of journalism is. And so if you think, well, what is going to make me popular? Well, it's going to not really be covering Kamala Harris very hard. You know, you look at journalists like Alex Thompson at Axios, just a small example, who dares to just do a little bit of journalism. Hey, this is what you believe in 2019. Do you still believe it? And even he gets criticized. Say, how dare you do it? You know what you're doing? You might get Donald Trump elected. They get the pushback for it. And if you don't have really a set of just intestinal fortitude to kind of withstand a little bit of social ostracization, you're not really doing your job as a journalist.
Yeah, I mean, that's very much was the point. And I think, look, I've seen that happen in talk radio as well. Like, I remember getting into the business, and like, it was very much like the best hosts were challenging their audience all the time. They were pushing back. And I feel like a lot of that, I mean, we've done it many times on our show. A lot of people in the audience hated us for doing it. But I think it's important, right? Like, it's important to sometimes write stuff about your own side and tell you, hey, like, this sucks. The media has abandoned that, except for this golden age of journalism that lasted for 2 weeks. And, and really, that was true. They were amazing at their jobs. It shows they have the talent. They know how to do it. They can work these sources and get the real information. And sadly, they're just choosing not to. It almost makes it all worse.
It does. You know, I talk about Alex Thompson. You know, he revealed something in that little 2 week glory period of journalism that happened earlier this summer when they were trying to push Biden out, that essentially Joe Biden is only able to be president between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Mm. I mean, it's a shocking revelation that was kind of just thrown aside in like the fourth paragraph of an article about the efforts to maybe push Joe Biden out. But you have to think, this is someone who's extremely well-sourced, who knows people both in the administration and kind of in larger Washington elite establishment. This is something that was obviously known. It was known before the June 28th debate, but it was essentially said, all right, look, don't ask, don't tell. Let's just see if we can get through this campaign, get through this cycle. Joe Biden wants to run again. Okay, well, what are we going to do about it? Okay. And until they really saw their opening, which was the debate, when it became so blatantly obvious for everyone to see that something needed to be done, that they started to get the wheels in motion there. So it can be done. They've got the sources to do it, but you have to actually sort of withstand the pressure to go ahead and actually make it happen, to do their jobs. And it's story after story. Again, COVID, I think, was just such a perfect example of it. To go against the grain, to go against the people that are going to tell you you're a purveyor of misinformation, that does take a level of trusting yourself to go out there and do your job. And it just so often they don't really do that anymore.
In your book, you talked to pretty much everybody in the media. I mean, you had tons and tons of interviews with big name players all across the media, left, right, everywhere. Why is Alex Thompson doing this? We've highlighted him on this show as well. He has been one of the very few people who has just asked questions like, hey, 2019, can you give me an answer as to why you're changing these policies? So many of these things have come from this one guy. Why is he doing this?
Yeah, and I should say, I think that there are multiple people within the media, and I say multiple as in like, I don't know, eight maybe.
Right, right.
There's not a large number of people, but there are certainly some. I'll give you another name, Sean McCreesh over at the New York Times, who is covering Trump right now. You look at like what do mainstream reporters do who are on the trail, New York Times, The Atlantic. Compare Sean McCreesh's coverage to, say, The Atlantic's coverage of the Trump campaign, the RFK situation, and it's night and day. It's someone who is actually curious about what's happening, interested in what the people are on the ground, why they believe what they believe, rather than just sort of talking at them. So there are some other people. But Alex, I don't know Alex personally, but I will say this. One of the interesting stories a couple of years ago was that Alex had a contract for a book about the Biden administration. This was, you know, Biden's first term, and it was canceled by his publisher because they were like, well, there's not really any good stories to tell. You know, no one really wants to hear about the Biden administration. All they want to hear about is Trump and whether he runs again. And so I do think that when you get burned in a certain way, you might say, well, I was going to get canceled. It's not canceled, but my book was going to get canceled. My book was not going to get published because I had the kind of truth that people didn't seem to want to hear, that there wasn't a marketplace for. And then when suddenly you realize that there is a marketplace for it, or even if you're willing to, say, push up against the establishment in that way, you lean into it. And so, you know, I'm glad that he's doing it.
Last one before you go, Steve. I think tomorrow is 4 weeks from Election Day. Kind of step back. You watch all the stuff. Of course, you're the executive producer of the Megyn Kelly Show as well. You watch all the stuff every single day really closely. What's your 10,000 foot view of what's going on in the election and what we're going to see over the next 4 weeks?
Yeah. The short answer is I think that it's a very close race and that there will be multiple shoes to drop over these next 4 weeks. We talk about October surprise, and I think we're already starting to see that. You mentioned the Doug Emhoff story in the Daily Mail. I don't think that story is gone. The idea that there is essentially an unvetted candidate on one side of the aisle, not just her VP, but Kamala Harris herself. I think that there's Oppo research still to drop on that front. And then do not underestimate what the corporate media and the left team together will do with Donald Trump. So I think that there are lots of elements of this race still to come. But I do think that if just purely from what I've gathered, I think from just what we're seeing in certain, you know, and maybe it's anecdotal, but the kind of interviews that are happening by even like Don Lemon interviewing people on the boardwalk in Atlantic City and just getting person after person telling them they support Donald Trump. I don't know. I would be very interested in when we go back and talk about, 2 days after Election Day, 3 days after Election Day, what did it? I think there's going to be certain constituencies that were majorly undercounted in how they were going to turn out and who they were going to support when it comes to Donald Trump or Kamala Harris.
Steve Krakauer is the author of Uncovered, How the Media Got Cozy with Power, Abandoned Its Principles, and Lost the People. Be sure to grab a copy of that today. Steve, really appreciate you coming on and talking about all this.
Hey, thanks, man. Anytime.
Have you been planning for like two different futures? I've been doing that lately. I've noticed like, hey, if this happens with the election, I want to prepare for that. And I'm preparing a totally different way if this happens in this election. I feel like we're at one of those crossroads right now. Protecting yourself against what comes around the corner when it comes to your retirement, your wealth, what you might hand down to your children is really important. And it's important not only that you have good returns there, it's important that those investments match your principles. You know, if you're avoiding buying certain products in stores or seeing certain movies at the theaters because you don't like the way these companies operate, you should do the same thing with your investments. Constitution Wealth can help you with that. They can help divest your money from corporations that mock your values and hate you. Your investments are some of the most powerful weapons you have to fight the culture war. You know, it's a lot more than a purchase at a grocery store. Constitution Wealth can help you partner with advisors who truly understand and share your conservative, patriotic values. These guys are like you. They want the same things you want, and they can help you. Take action now. Visit constitutionwealth.com/blaze and help help yourself get out of all of this. Sign up with get a free consultation today. They'll walk you through the whole process. It's quite simple. constitutionwealth.com/blaze, constitutionwealth.com/blaze. So much to talk about. A couple things I didn't get to today that I wanted to get into more. The rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, which was incredible. I mean, usually rallies don't affect elections. If there is any chance of a rally affecting an election, it was that one. Massive crowd in a very important state after a dramatic moment in American history. Incredible. If you didn't get to see any of that, we did do a live right after it at youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. It's still posted now, and it's, you know, just as is. You know, important and current as it was then. I mean, we just went through the entire speech, took your questions. Check that out there. I'll also be live tonight after the 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris. So if we get any good nuggets there, we'll go through them and make sure you know about them. Also wanted to tell you about a Supreme Court declining the Biden administration appeal in the Texas emergency abortion case. Basically, to keep this short, it's good for the pro-life side. It was a request to try to force hospitals to break Texas law and provide abortions in certain circumstances. That was rejected. So we'll get into that maybe a little bit more tomorrow. Also want to tell you about Blaze Unlimited, blazeunlimited.com/stu, blazeunlimited.com/stu. This is like, you're getting on the founding level right now. There's a few spots available. There's this great actual print magazine called Frontier, Culture, Art Issues, a deep dive into the El Salvador miracle. So much there. Check it out, blazeunlimited.com/stu. Claim your spot today.